Okay, this meeting is now out of recess, and we are back ready to continue with our committee meeting. Let the record show that the meeting reconvened at 3:36 on Thursday, April 7th. And those present are Representative Seaton, Representative Gardner, Representative Cisna, and myself, Wilson. And our committee aides today are Kathy Hope Erickson, Ellen Nodder, and Elizabeth Hastorf. And we will hear House Bill 193. This bill has been before the committee before, and there's been some work done on it, and now we're back, and there's been some agreements come to and some decisions made, and so we've got some amendments. And so we'll not be taking public testimony, but we will be hearing about the amendments and the changes that have been made. So Dr. Monsalger, if you'd like to come forward. Oh, and let the record show that Representative Corrine has just joined us. And also Representative McGuire and Anderson are actually in another committee meeting right now, so they are being excused from this committee. And Dr. Monsalger, go ahead.
For the record, my name is Dr. Monsalger. I'm the Director of the Division of Public Health, and I'm going to start the discussion again today of HB 193. Ms. Virginia Stonkus will join me here when we get to the question and answer period in a few minutes. And Stacy Crayley, I think, from Department of Law, is on the line and will also join in answering questions and discussion as we proceed. The first thing I'd like to say, though, is try and answer the question, why am I back so soon? And if those of you who remember where we left this about 3 weeks ago, it was with the impression that this is going to take a long time, and most of you didn't expect to see this again until maybe next winter. Well, I will apologize right off the start that I forgot I was carrying a governor's bill at that moment in time. And I hope you will forgive me. And so I quickly realized that I could have come up with 10 answers to that question, and I came up with a bad answer. And so we've done work on this in the intervening 3 weeks since we were here before. So I think one comment that was made to follow on that question was asked that day was, how much involved are the various industries that are affected by this bill? And we have received comments now by at least 8 or 9 different organizations, and they are all supportive of this bill in concept and many of the particulars, and there have been some verbal discussions too, and that feeds into some of the amendments we want to propose to the bill. And so we would like to have the bill movement continue, and would like to use this time to do that. Before we start discussion, since this got scheduled late yesterday, there are two pieces of paper that you don't have that Kathy would like to hand out and put in front of you. One is this form that I'll be talking about in a minute, which is a side-by-side comparison of what's in current statute and what's new, prepared by Stacy of Department of Law, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And then the second piece of paper is a single piece of paper that looks like this that Kathy's going to hand out. Did you already?
Yep.
And this one is an explanation of the two amendment packets that you have in front of you, and we'll talk about that when we get to them.
And inside your behind tab one are the actual amendments. So if you can look through there and find them, they're right after the fiscal note.
And we'll get there in a minute or two. For starters, I think since it has been 3 weeks, it's useful to take just about a minute as to the intent of this bill. And the intent of this bill is to consolidate the various licensing and certification activities of the department, of all the licensing and certification activities the department does, that takes care of everything from licensing of hospitals to licensing of assisted living homes and everything in between. And also, the bill adds two new activities, at least in part. One of those is a background check process, which exists today for certain parts of the industries that are regulated by the department, but not for all. And that's a criminal background check. And then the other part that's new, largely new, is in this bill is called centralized registry, and a better term for it would be an employee misconduct registry. And that exists today with certified nurse aides. It's presently administered by the Board of Nursing, and the registry concept that's in this bill is modeled very heavily on what exists today for certified nurse aides in our state. And I'll talk about that too in a bit. But to try and keep straight, it's taken me a long time to keep straight that the employee misconduct registry deals with civil issues of abuse, neglect, or exploitation, and the criminal background check deals with criminal activities a person may have been involved in. Well, why put us through this process of this statute development? As I said last time I was here, in large measure, it's because of the complexity that has developed in statute and regulation due to the various times over the decade that these types of industries have developed: hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living homes, hospice. And everyone has grown up with some mixture of statute and regulation, all individually developed. Department of Law gets to try and interpret this every time we have an appeal or an administrative hearing, and has to figure out where this activity fits. And the organizations that do more than one type of work, for example, HOPE or ARC, that may have assisted living homes, they may have registered psychiatric treatment centers, they may have other social service functions, some organizations might have hospitals and nursing homes, they have to keep track of all of these different state rules for their different parts of work. So that's the reason for the bill, is to try and put into one statute the various rules of how we're going to work, and then have regulations that are as much similar as possible. They may be a little different. For example, if you're dealing with children and adults in some cases, that may be a little different, but it will be largely the same. And then regulations can be adapted to problems as we go forward over time. So that's why we're here today on this journey that's going to be somewhat laborious. Well, let me talk a little bit, just also in start, about the Employee Misconduct Registry. That's on page 27, line 26 is where it starts. It's called Centralized Registry in the bill. As I said, it's based on the current Certified Nurse Aide Registry, but it expands it to all employees. Why? The purpose is to get at people who have committed exploitation, abuse, or neglect, and then as we develop this registry, this then becomes a barrier to their employment in another industry. I've had calls now personally from executives of at least two different organizations in this intervening 3 weeks who have told me stories of somebody that they got rid of for Medicaid fraud, and then they find out the person's employed by a sister organization down the street. And then one executive told me they hired somebody after they got involved in having to repay money to Medicaid by activities of that employee. They find out the person had previous problems at a previous organization, to try and stop that kind of employment problems. So the Employee Misconduct Registry would be first. It would be public and available to executives or employing organizations to be able to find that. If somebody's name is not on there, and most people won't be on there because they won't have committed these kinds of behaviors, then there would be a criminal background check done for employment. So if I, Dick Monsager, am employed by a hospital or wanting to be employed by a hospital, the employer would first have to check to see, have I committed any of those activities? The answer is no. Then there will be a criminal background check to make sure that I haven't done criminal activities. And in regulation then, as we said last time, certain activities would be permanent bar. For example, I'm a pediatrician. If I had done some kind of abuse or sexual abuse of a minor, I should not be employable. If I was a person that when I was 19 in college, I got drunk, I got in a bar fight, and had some kind of a misdemeanor or felony, and now it's 20 years later, have an employment record, have had no trouble, that would be something that would not have a permanent bar. And certain of these kinds of industries that we regulate, some of them have fairly extensive background check processes and rules, assisted living being the most extensive, in which it defines certain number of years for certain kind of crimes, and permanent employment barrier status for other crimes.
Dr. Monsager, who has access to that?
That would be an activity that we in the state would be providing that information to the employer.
Okay, so it's not something like I just couldn't say, oh, I wonder who these people are. I couldn't get on and find it out myself.
Well, you could if you wanted to, because the criminal information is all public information through the court system anyhow.
Okay, all right.
It would be a little bit laborious for you probably, and you'd have to know how to do it, but you could.
Okay.
Is that correct, Stacy? I thought, is Stacy online?
Stacy, if you have your mute button pushed.
I haven't. Oh. I didn't know if she was open.
Okay. Stacy, can you hear us?
No. Kelly is sitting behind me. She's another attorney of the Department of Law. Did I say that correctly? Okay.
Okay. Right. Representative Seaton.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to figure out the. That information is available for somebody to go out and dig through now with a background check. So, but I think the question was, will the registry be available to the general public, even though that may be contain a lot of information that's available elsewhere, will the registry itself be available?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the employee misconduct registry, I think that's one of the questions we're looking for advice for the committees as we go through the process here. It needs to be available to employers to be of use. Should be it be generally available to the public? The certified nurse aide registry is available to the public, and that's what we're modeling on currently in Alaska.
So, Madam Chair?
Yeah. Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
So on the registry, is there anything going to be on there that's not proven or adjudicated? If somebody dismisses somebody because they say they were stealing drugs from them and they just dismiss them, will that file then go on the registry even though it wasn't adjudicated? Or is it only going to be things for which there were charges filed and charges somebody found guilty of something?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the current bill as proposed on line 5 on page 28 states, sections 1 and 2 there state that they are orders, judgments, and adjudications that the employee has committed abuse, neglect, or exploitation under certain statutes, and you can see them listed there, and then orders from another state from another area. Now, the question that you were asking, I think, is what happens if an employer fires somebody? What we're envisioning is a registry in which the employers would make reports, but the department would have to have findings to which an employee would be able to contest and have administrative hearings before their name would go on for some kind of an activity that doesn't have a court action.
This bill does go to judiciary after this committee. Mm-hmm. And Kathy, I would like to make sure that we pass that on to them so they look into that, because I really, this committee, if they were here, we could ask her about that and to make sure. I would like to make sure that is talked about, at least in judiciary, to make sure that we're not changing things that aren't already possible. So,
Chairman Wilson, I fully expect that this part is going to get amended before this bill gets finished to further define, and I'll let Virginia add to the answer if that's okay.
Through the chair again, my name is Virginia Stonkus with the Division of Public Health.
Virginia, say your last name again.
Stonkus. And Representative Seaton, that is a question that has, over the last couple of weeks, we have looked at. The one issue that I think we want to make very, very clear is this is not a bar to someone coming into the health services field if there is no record there. This is an employee misconduct registry that is based only on action taken that has been through a decision, through an adjudication, or through a hearing, proven that someone has, in fact, abused, neglected, or exploited someone in that field that is not necessarily of a criminal nature. That's the part that we wanted to make sure. So if you're applying for a job in this field for the first time, there would be no reason to ever be on that registry. if you are in that field and there is a finding, whether it's, again, reported by an assisted living home provider or through the course of an inspection, the concern, and it does go through a hearing or a process that we can, in fact, substantiate, that's when there would be an opportunity to go on the register. The other issues right now in terms of what would go on the register would be enough information only to identify the person through name and perhaps birth date, and some indication of the nature of, not what it was, but that there was, in fact, something found. And that would be the only information that would be available on that register.
Representative Anderson, Gardner, and then from there, I don't know why I do that, but Representative Gardner, and then when you're finished, Representative Sidna.
Okay, thank you. I'm curious about the adjudication and findings. Would that be within the Department of Health and Social Services, or are you talking about court? Because I can see a lot of employers who want to let someone go because they don't trust them with their the people they're taking care of, but they don't necessarily want to go to the extent of filing charges and go to court. So did you envision a panel in which it would be done in a less formal way?
Yes, we have. And I think, again, whether it has to go through a full formal hearing process or, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kelly, but I think at this particular juncture, the hearing that would have to be initiated by the department through the process that we would explore, if someone chose then to challenge that and want to have a hearing, then we would do that.
Go ahead, Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my question would be kind of the several different parts to this, because there's the employer that lets someone go because they think something's wrong, or they know something's wrong, but they're not ready to call the police. For whatever reasons, and that does happen. I've worked at too many institutions that have had these things happen, unfortunately. Or the case where a person has actually had a charge against them, and it's been settled out of court, or they were cleared, but it's happened a dozen times. And they always kind of get off for whatever reason, and that happens. And what is the process that you would do if you're doing it in the department? How would you do that?
Representative Assistant through the chair, the provider's responsibility, their employer's responsibility is to report a concern, a suspicion, a known activity or something. It's going to be the department's responsibility to investigate and conduct some kind of a process to reach a finding. And it would be impossible for me to imagine a position result that is always going to get to the truth. In the case of somebody who does just enough to get concerns and then moves off, and so let's say provider X makes a report to us, we investigate, there's not enough to substantiate it, they move off to another employer, reporter Y reports. Eventually a case history starts being put together, at which some point in that process, I believe that then there would be a finding that we could substantiate and put the name on the registry. But it may not happen that first time out.
And if I may do a follow-up, and yes, I understand that there's the thinking that the judiciary is going to handle this kind of question, but I guess my problem is that here in the HES committee, our concern is the quality of the health service that's given, and that what we come out of, what we pass out of this legislature, at least as far as I'm concerned in terms of my product here, is that is a product that's going to bring better, after this bill goes through, better enforcement of quality care for children and adults that are in vulnerable situations in our state. And the licensure is kind of the only way that we can affect the private sector at all. And that means I want to know how in the world you're going to do that to safeguard that. So what structure are you going to use to do that in the department?
Representative Sitna through the chair, what I would think would be fair to say is in development is potentially expanded section 47053.30 to get at your questions to try and put more on record. And the question the legislature is going to have to answer is how much do they definition, how much detail do they want to this process in statute, and how much shall we have in regulation to have some more flexibility. And either at this committee or the next one, I fully expect that this part needs to be better defined given the questions that are coming already both on the House and Senate side.
And that's, you know, I want to make sure that that's, when I pass the bill out, I'm going to make sure that that is something that they address in judiciary.
Madam Chair, I guess my problem here, and I'm going to speak very frankly, I go back a long way. I was a staff member in 71. I was a staff member again in 74 for this, in the interim on the HES committee. So I saw some of the early creation of some of these kinds of things and know that there's a huge amount of history, huge amount of time that these statutes reflect. Not to say there isn't some dead wood in here, because I know there is. At the very same time, I know that there were questions about this being going through really fast 3 weeks ago, and all of a sudden we're going to let the next committee, whose concern is judicial, it's not health and welfare. And my concern as a committee member is I don't want to sign off on something that has huge questions in it that I think needs more work.
I actually don't have a problem with that. And so if you have an amendment that you'd like to put on, I'm very open for
that. The amendment would be to spend more time on this, because the fact is I have a list of questions I'd love to pass out.
That's why we're here today. That's why we're here today. So just continue. I'm open for it. If you have an amendment you'd like to put on, we're very open to hear.
Well, and one of the amendments would be that we, before this passes out of this committee, that we have a little bit more concrete ideas of how the department's going to handle the quality assurance on, and just basic questions about if we're going to be screening, having a list of people who have had questions about their background. How is it going to, is it going to be open to the public? If it's open to the public, then what level of disclosure are you going to give so that it even be useful?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, right now on page 28, line 23, the current bill states that the information contained in the registry is a public record. So as currently constructed, it's a public record. For the information that is up on line 5 under those particular statutes.
Representative Sisson?
Madam Chair, I think that maybe if that's what it says and you're talking about doing something else that isn't in here, that ought to be left to another bill.
No.
Representative Sisson, through the chair, I think if you got that interpretation, I spoke wrong. What we're talking about is either in regulation defining this, because it's clearly going to have to be much better defined no matter how much goes into statute, how you do it is going to be in regulation. But if the legislature wants more detail and more in statute than is here, that is possible. And we currently are working on language that could either be in statute if the legislature wants it that way, or could be in regulation to define how this process will work.
Representative Seaton.
I guess I've got a couple of questions. One is that if this registry is all adjudicated items and it's all available in the public record right now, is the intent of this registry just so that it's easier for somebody to go and do a cursory background check, and then if they find anything, then they have to do a more complete background check?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I'll answer first and then see if Virginia wants to answer. I think that that's close, but not the way I would answer the question. What I envision that an employee misconduct registry does is, if I'm an employer, Joe Smith comes in and wants to apply for work, I can quickly type into my computer, see if Joe Smith has committed any of these activities. If so, I don't need to receive an employment application from Joe Smith. If that person, and most people won't be on this registry because they won't have committed these kinds of activities, then Joe Smith then does apply And then we go through the process of doing a criminal background check. So the person, by the time they're employed, both parts of their past are known.
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I guess I'm not sure how expensive this is going to be to do, just to make it quicker for you not to take an application. And if you're going to have to do the background check anyway, and it's going to have the full information on everyone, and all you're including in the registry is adjudicated items, it seems like we're going through a lot of expense so that when somebody comes with their employment application, they don't have to put their employment application in, and the background check doesn't go. But I guess my greater concern is E, where it says, notwithstanding any contrary provision of law, the department may also submit information described in this section to the registry. And so it seems like in one part we're saying this is going to contain adjudication, and now we're saying that whether it's speculative information or just reports or other items that weren't adjudicated, the department can now put in. And the liability of putting in information that hasn't been adjudicated as a basically as a barrier to employment could be huge for the state. And so I would like, and I know this is HESS and not judiciary, and I don't mean to make it like judiciary, but this is the healthcare workers of the state that we're putting in here, and it could be, you know, quite a, depending upon what the department at the time decides to put into this record and make public or available, could be very interesting for the healthcare system.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think one thing is important to keep track of, or to keep separate, which is I keep struggling with, and if one of the attorneys that's here wants to answer this, I'd welcome them to come forward, and that is that the Employee Misconduct Registry deals with civil issues, the criminal background check deals with criminal issues, and so you're gathering different information through these two processes. And then the second question here is in regulation or in statute, if the legislature requests, this first sentence number needs to be have a marked amount of quantification, because we should not be putting information that is unverified, unsubstantiated, unadjudicated into somebody's record that would bar from future employment. That would not be the right thing to do.
Okay, and just one more follow-up. Thank you. So then this is going to be mainly the civil cases, civil that are not easily found through, because you don't do a criminal background check.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the purpose of the registry now.
It only took me 2 months to figure this out, as I've been working with the staff in the background before this got introduced, to figure that out. So let's say I had a light bulb go off one day and I said, now I'm starting to get it.
Okay, Dr. Monsonger, yes. Would you give me an example of each?
Can I?
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I might, this is exactly the point I wanted to talk about, because I have a constituent who brought this issue to me. And so I was really pleased when this bill came through, and I immediately asked Dr. Munsinger if it would address the issue my constituent brought, and they've been talking together over this three-week period. My constituent has a small business. Actually, it's not very small. It's quite large. He employs a lot of people who provide services to frail adults, elderly, disabled people, whatever, in their homes. He has, over time, had a lot of situations in which he had to fire an employee for mistreatment of any sort, for fraud, where they've billed for hours that they didn't actually work. He discovered it. As an employer, not only does he fire the person, but he also is responsible for repaying that money. And so he has a liability anytime he learns that he has paid somebody, because he then gets the money from Medicare or the state or whatever. Then he would find out that these people that he fired for whatever reason were now working for another provider down the street. And there was no legal way for him to tell them, watch out, check his hours, make sure he's there when he says he's there, or watch out that he's not stealing from people or whatever. He had no way, and it really troubled him. What I'm worried about with this registry is that what's the threshold of proof? You could have somebody accused of theft, you fire them, and then they're kind of blacklisted in a way, and yet the state can't afford to have a trial for all of these things, and we all know employers who let people go all the time on something that's not necessarily provable, but they believe that the employee maybe even accepts it. What I wonder, if it wouldn't work, is this way. When you check somebody's employment references, a lot of employers will not say very much about them. They're afraid of a lawsuit. But one question that is absolutely legal, nobody can raise a problem, is would you hire this person again? That's simply my, as an employer, if I am, I can tell anybody I'd hire them or I wouldn't hire them. I don't have to give any reason. And I wonder if we couldn't have some list of, if agencies have a list of all their employees and then I want to hire somebody, I can see if they've ever worked for anybody else in the state on this kind of business and call them and say, would you hire them back? Then the state doesn't have to have any panel or adjudication. Nobody's open to lawsuits. We simply say, as an employer, it's my responsibility, if I want to protect all the people that I'm caring for, to just call their previous employer and ask them.
Well, the only thing that, I mean, that makes sense. However, there's also personalities involved in here. And if we do just that, then, you know, this person, I don't know why, but they just rubbed me the wrong way, mm-hmm. and I'm going to put them
like
on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
so
that's right.
We don't want that yeah. to happen. So where do we draw the line?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe legally. I don't know.
You want to take a stab at that?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner. I think, again, that's exactly what we were trying to struggle with in that mm-hmm. process. And rather than open everyone who's ever been employed, it's focused just on those who we would not want back in the system. As a licensing agency, we are responsible for assuring that the programs that we fund meet the standards that are set. So mm-hmm. the issue of the registry would be, if there is a report, and that would be one of the expectations, is that they would report to us a concern for abuse, neglect, or exploitation, that would be part of our investigation, that would be in part incumbent upon us to substantiate and assure that we found enough information based on that investigation to support a concern. We would, again, thinking through what we would envision at this particular juncture, the individual would be notified that we have come up with a substantiated, with substantial findings at this point. They would have an opportunity to request a full review, and we would honor that, so that there would be due process in terms of making sure that it wasn't just a personality issue. It was not something that was vindictive. There was substantially the due process considerations. If they declined that hearing, then that would be our decision. Then the decision had been made that they would be eligible for their name going on that registry. If they chose to do the hearing and we went through that process and that finding was upheld, then we have the adjudication and the support again to put that individual's name on the registry. They throughout the whole process, they would have a chance to go back and challenge if there was a finding that they thought was done in error. So again, I think our concern and consideration here is wanting to be respectful of the folks who would be on that registry. We also feel, as you're saying with your client, there are enough situations where we could not legally or through the court process or through the criminal process find that capacity. And this is the registry process that through the folks that we work with have said makes good sense. And the one thing that we thought we were fairly novel, this is in place in 10 other states today. They do an employee registry, with an employee misconduct registry. So there's legal precedent to have this in place.
Representative
Seaton. I guess if this is for all people that participate through some kind of a grant or some kind of employment set, some offering services through the state, what is the necessity of making this a public record instead of having somebody who's offering a service for the state call them up and say, you know, John C. Jones, is he on your registry? And because if all we're providing is a simple list of people, I can foresee, you know, that's available to the general public, I can foresee many cases where, gee, the newspaper doesn't have anything to do today, and we can publish all the people in Homer that are on the state registry that are not good people, that shouldn't be employed by anybody in the healthcare field, and that public information, you've made it available, and now all of a sudden we've got a situation in which I'm not sure that that's where we're wanting to go with this. And I just want to know if that fulfills the use without getting in the problem.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I can think of two ways of getting at your question. I'm interested in your opinion or the committee's opinion as to there are three options, I think, assuming we do a registry at all. One is it's open to the public and any employer, anybody can look at it. Another is employers have to sign up with us and certain people are qualified with password codes to come in and look at it. And so employer X would have whoever does their HR, somebody would be the person that has access or something. And the third is your solution, which is employer X calls in and we have to have a staff person that would answer their question if they're on our registry and it's kept contained. Again, you would have, I think the problem is, who is this person who's calling me now? I'm intrigued with the middle one, which would be, is not available to the public, but somebody could sign up through a sign-up process as an employer that they would have access, a certain person on their staff would have access, it wouldn't be generally available.
I kind of like that one myself. Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess it almost sounds like this is a criminal background check. That, I mean, if you, well, the, okay, except that if you're not saying it's a criminal background check, then you're talking about the state, through whatever mechanism it does, making a determination on who would be on that list and who wasn't, and it wouldn't be criminal. It would be charges that were substantiated in some way. And really, I guess where I actually want to go is that I'm a person who's kind of obnoxious, trustworthy but obnoxious. I've run into those people. I've worked with them. Some of them have been here. But people who maybe aren't great to be around and who might wind up on that I wouldn't hire them list, and we have them around. I can think of people who've been here, not always, I mean, not necessarily working here, but just been around. But nonetheless, they wind up on that list. How do you handle appeals? And who really makes that decision? Who is it? And if, in fact, there are other states that have done it, where are examples of that? Because I'd like to see those. I'd like to read examples of what states have done it so that we can see what choices there are in what would be best for Alaska.
And you know what? Well, first of all, we aren't just going to pop somebody's name, or they aren't going to pop somebody's name up there, because they're going to do an investigation. They're not just going to take somebody's word for it. They're going to go out and check this out.
But, Madam Chair, and then the question would be, what's the fiscal note on that? Because if they're going to do the investigation on that, and it's not a criminal check, then you've got to be fairly thorough about that. And that's time, and that's money.
And we do have two fiscal notes. One is a zero fiscal note, but one does have money attached to it.
For specifically this registry?
The representative assistant through the chair, the more complex and the more rights we give the individuals for appeals, the higher the cost is going to be. And I think Representative Seaton has already been touching on that, and I think you're touching on it too now. And so if we want to do right by the individuals with a very extensive appeal process, then I think the fiscal note is going to need to increase. And we need to balance that out as we go through the amendment process with this bill as to how much of an appeal process, how much of a hearing process, and so on. Is it going to be informal? Is it going to be formal? Is it going to be subject to the Administrative Procedures Act? Is it going to be that kind of a process? And so the other question you asked is what states have done that? We can get you that answer. I don't know that off the top of my head today. I was going to say something else. I can't think.
State your name again, please.
I'm sorry, Virginia Stankus with Public Health. Representative Cisna, one thing that I and Dr. Monsager is always asking me, because we've been working on this for almost 2 years, we meaning the folks that do the licensing and the folks that we license. It's been a very collaborative process because their concern also is yours, life, health, and safety. The issue of cost is in assisted living homes specifically today, we respond to every report or every complaint that we get. That is investigated. And a lot of the issues that we investigate are not that different from what we're doing now. The general consensus and general thinking on this one is this is what we do. This is part of the process of assuring that the folks that we do regulate do in fact meet the standard that they are supposed to be doing. This allows them another opportunity to take the concerns that they do find and possibly now assure that it will not happen again if in fact there is substantial finding that based on that investigation, we would not want to encourage that individual to stay in that field.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I guess, and that's great. I'm a little concerned because we're another branch of government. This is before us. We're supposed to be making a decision on this until this afternoon. I didn't know that this was going to come up. And I actually have back in my Anchorage office a file on this, on things that people have told me that they wanted to have included in this, because we knew we were going to be talking about it. It's gone on for 2 years, and why has not the legislature been kind of party to what you were working on? Because I was not aware of that.
Representative Sisna, through the chair, the formal answer, I think, is that until a bill got submitted, there wasn't really something for you to work with. The informal answer would be, if last summer, should we have invited some of the legislators to work on the process?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. We're today here today, and maybe we should have.
Representative Sisson, would you like to, as the department works this through, would you like to represent the committee with them as they go through that process?
Yeah, I'd be thrilled.
Okay. I'm going to appoint you to do that.
All right,
and
thank you.
So that you can get input, because it's not the intention at all that we hurry this through so that things don't get taken care of that should. So I would be glad to have that take place. So I thank you for being willing to do that.
Can I ask a question? I'm thrilled to do it. As a minority member, do I get equal standing with majority members on being able to have input on this and actually have decisions made based on that?
Yeah, I'm not even going to appoint anybody else. You are going to be the person from this committee to do it.
Thank you.
Unless somebody else insists on they want to be on it too. So, Representative Seaton.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is getting into the subcommittee but I had my hand up before that was appointed. But I would like to see if Dr. Monsager come back to us with a proposed amendment for the registry that would deal with the intermediate solution that you had talked about, because it seems to me that that gets to, without having a bunch of employees sitting around waiting to answer the phone, but it keeps confidentiality and it keeps it within the state system instead of broadcasting out publicly. So if
so basically it would be to change Section F.
Yes. Change Section F, and I would also like to see a little bit of definition on Section E as well.
Okay. Can we move to some of the other issues? We knew going in that this registry was going to get lots of discussion, so this doesn't surprise me at all. I just want to comment on this. This is just a reference document as this bill moves along that Stacy Crayley put together, that really points out that most of this bill is taken from, in quotes, the best, end quotes, of current statute. The only place really in current statute where there's very much definition in statute is with assisted living homes. Most of the other industries regulated are regulated through regulation to the vast majority of extent. And so most of the modeling is off the assisted living statute. But you can see there still is some new stuff in here. And this is, if there's any questions, this is just for your information. The other thing that I wanted to move to is several of the, oh, excuse me.
Yeah, I just need to raise one flag, and that is that, I don't know about the other members of the committee, but I have heard so much from assisted living centers, homes, about the problems of the current regulations and the changes. And I think that, was there a hearing that I missed on a, I think, a few weeks ago?
Correct, right.
That was, dealing with assisted living homes and the regulations and the way they're being applied, and so I want to make sure that we're not building into this the problems that we've been hearing about. So I just, since.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, if you are hearing problems with statute or regulation about that, I'd really like to know about that, because as we're modeling and developing this, we need to not replicate current problems if we have them in statute today.
Okay, thank you. And I'll get with you later.
Okay. Let me just walk through the amendments, which look like two fairly big packets, but they really are only four issues. Most of these packet has to do with renumbering. Once you start messing with it, with a couple of these parts of it, everything renumbers, and you have pages and pages and pages of renumbering here. The first issue, so I'm going to talk about the one that's called Amendment Number 1 first. The first issue that why this one is so long is a numbering, is a dating issue. When this was drafted, it was envisioned that the criminal background check would start on July 1st, 2005. Well, that isn't going to happen. By the time the legislation finally gets passed and regulation development and so on. And so most of Amendment Number 1 moves the effective date to the spring of 2006 or as soon as possible after the bill gets passed. And so that's most of what Amendment Number 1 is. The other issue in Amendment Number 1 is the last two lines of page 1. And you have to open a part of your bill to go with this, which is page 15, line 24. And what this is on page 2 of the bill, it lists all of the entities that this applies to: hospitals, ambulatory surgical centers, assisted living homes, etc. An issue that I have a concern about is that as medical technology changes, certain very complex stuff moves out of hospitals into freestanding things. And in many states in the country right now, there are three main kinds of these activities. One is radiation treatment units that may have things including linear accelerators and so on for treating cancer with radiation. Another is chemotherapy units for treating cancer, and the third is cardiac catheterization laboratories. They always used to be in hospitals, and they were a part of the licensing of hospitals. Now, as they move out, at some level of complexity, I believe the state should have a step in and have a role in regulation and checking safety and licensure. So these last two lines on page 1, it's basically a response to my thought, and I wish I had better language because I don't think the language is right yet, is to put some flexibility into the definition of an ambulatory surgical center that allows the state in the future, as some entity or activity of enough complexity and risk, that the state could say this entity now is going to become licensed and we're going to propose regs to propose licensing or regulating that entity. In our state, there really is only one of those at this point in this evolution because of our small population, and that is that there's a freestanding cardiac catheterization lab in Anchorage that's outside the hospital and outside of any licensure or regulation at present. But I also don't want this to be so broad that every doctor in the state says, the state's going to come in now and regulate our doctor's office if I'm a dermatologist and take moles off, or if I'm a plastic surgeon and take skin cancers off. That isn't what this is about. And so it's trying to find, is there some language that would give some flexibility but would not be so broad that it would be way too broad? And if we can't come up with language, then it's an idea that just needs to be killed off. And in the future, then, the whole statute should just be proposed to be amended for some particular thing.
I really think it needs to be narrowed because an invasive diagnostic or therapeutic service, There's a lot of things that are done in doctor's offices that would cover, that they already do, and it's just totally routine. And so I do think we have to work with that. That could include something as simple as putting an IUD in or something.
Yes.
And so we've got to.
If people don't have an idea of how to improve that today, I would suggest taking these two lines off if you decide to approve this amendment today to move as a part of this bill and leave it for the future for discussion, because I don't think the language is right today.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Is your thought to include such things as diagnostic center? We've got the CAT scan and I forget the imaging centers that are freestanding, and also we have orthopedic surgery centers. I mean, even in Homer, we have not only a hospital, but down the block we have a orthopedic surgeon, and they have their own clinic.
But that doesn't count invasive. When they take X-rays, that's not invasive as a rule.
Well, I'm not sure, because we're, if we're talking about cancer treatment where you're bombarding with,
Do they do the radiation therapy?
They don't currently at those places, so. But I'm wondering.
I think
what the parameters are that Dr. Montsager is looking at. I mean, because of course we've looked at the certificate of need, and one of the things that the big fight on certificate of need was is these multi-million-dollar imaging centers that are outside of hospitals, and I just want to know what parameters we're looking at on here. And like I say, we have an orthopedic surgery center in basically a doctor's clinic, but he's an orthopedic surgeon, and it's now done there instead of at the hospital most of the stuff in Homer. And so I'm just trying to get the perspective of what you think needs to be covered under this kind of a.
I think Representative Seaton is raising exactly the things why this language, I'm convinced, is not right, and the whole idea maybe is a bad idea. And that is, where is the boundaries? An imaging center does lots of radiation, and we currently, in regulation in this state and other regulations, deal with the safety of the physics of radiation units. The example I've used in my own head is a cardiac cath lab that is a mixture of radiation and putting somebody to sleep and putting tubes into somebody. At some place in that continuum, it seems like potentially the risk is high enough that you should make sure there are rules about safety and operations and so on. But I am willing to say that I could be wrong, because you just can't define it. And it may be that just in the future, if there is something of risk, we would just come back and propose to amend the statute and add a new category on page 2 of such and such a thing. And mostly I'm raising this for dialogue, and you all are, I think, verifying to me that it's probably not a good idea at present.
Yeah, I think maybe that, I think we need to pull that out.
Yeah.
And then think about it, because I think it's needed. I really do think that's needed. We do need to regulate those entities. We could actually, if we're not careful, we could actually say, a cardiac cath lab. We could actually name a few, and then as more came up, we could always amend it. But, I don't know what, Representative Seaton.
I guess I have a question. If we're talking about something that is medically very specific and generally technical complex, why do we need to regulate? I mean, are we worried about somebody coming in and setting up a meth lab? I mean, not a meth lab, but coming in and setting up some cardiac catheter lab that's not going to have sanitation, it seems like we're into the areas of specific medicine that are going to require a high degree of expertise and a high degree of medical malpractice insurance and those things. And I'm just wondering whether the state needs to further put regulations on those.
I think, Representative Seaton, you put your finger on probably the reason why this is not a good idea, and that is that there may be enough self-regulating mechanisms in place for those high-end medical complex things between insurance, the cost of operations, and a fly-by-night organization is not going to move in and set up because the cost of development is going to be so high that that it seems highly unlikely in our state that you would have an organization come in and say, we're going to cherry-pick for 2 years, and then we're moving on out of here. And until or if we have an example that that happens, it very well may be that this idea we should just drop for now.
Representative Sisna?
Well, and as I understand it, that's what the certificate of need is all about. I mean, that's part of the function of certificate of need is to look into those kinds of situations and try to figure out whether or not a community can even handle competing, and that's different than quality. But I guess my question would be, I need to understand because we're talking about medical. Does the AMA doesn't have anything to do with this? What kinds of medical professions do we cover? A lot, right?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, the physician licensing is handled over by the Board of Medicine.
Right.
And so this is separate. This is facility licensure, not physician licensure. Okay. So the issue that Representative Seaton was getting at is, don't physicians have enough regulation in place to already have to deal with the quality and the state doesn't have to go there? Mm-hmm. And for the tiny number of things that potentially might be at a risk that you might even think about, it may be that we have enough self-regulating mechanism, we just leave that alone for now. And I wouldn't want to hang this bill up for that issue.
So do we have an amendment offered for amendment number one to delete on page one, lines 18 through 21?
So moved.
Is there any objection to that amendment? Seeing no objection, amendment number one to amendment number one passes, which deletes on page one, lines 18 through 21.
So then the rest of this whole page and series of pages in amendment one is only renumbering to allow for any date of implementation.
Okay. Is there anyone that has any further questions on amendment number one? Do I have a motion to accept amendment number one?
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion to accept amendment number one as amended. Is there any objection to that? Seeing no objection, amendment number one as amended, that's 24G-1 is adopted.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Amendment number two has two issues in it. I'll go to the second one first, which is on page 13, line 1, which is what drives most of the pages in
of the bill.
Of the bill. And it's on page 2 of, no.
Excuse me, but I guess I have here an amendment. It isn't numbered.
Numbered.
And it's the one. 24G1?
It's 2:40-something p.m. Both of these were written about the same thing. Do you have the one that's...
Oh, you know, yes, it's 24G-1. In fact, they're both numbered the same.
Yeah, they are.
Which is a problem. And it starts out with page 9, line 24.
Line 24. Okay, got it.
Okay, so we will call this amendment number 2. Oh, sure. We'll take a brief video. We are having some technical difficulties with the phone lines here. So anyone that's listening in, if you could go to the web, you'll be able to listen through the internet on gavel to gavel. And if you're not hearing me, you don't know about it. But if you are, you can either stay online, but you can't testify through the phone lines right now because it's not working. So, Dr. Montier, would you like to go on? I think we're Representative Gardner.
I move to rescind our last action, which was to pass Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Representative Gardner. We are. Is there any objection to rescinding the action and adopting Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, Amendment Number 1 is no. We rescinded our action and adopting. Representative Gardner.
Then I move to amend Amendment Number 1 by deleting lines 4 through lines 31. Which essentially
31 or 21?
21. Sorry, my number's punched out. Delete lines 4 through 21, which removes all the descriptive stuff about ambulatory centers.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to call that Amendment Number 2 to Amendment Number 1, since we
number
had
two?
Previously adopted another amendment. We had previously adopted amendment removing line 18 through 21, and we haven't rescinded that action, so we're just going to call this Amendment Number 2, deleting all the material on line 4 through 21.
Okay.
Is there any objection to Amendment Number 2 to Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, Amendment Number 2 is adopted. Representative Gardner.
Okay, now I'll move Amendment Number 1, the parts that remain.
Thank you. And is there any objection to adopting Amendment Number 1 as amended? Seeing none, Amendment Number 1 is again adopted.
All right.
Okay, and we are on to Amendment Number 2, and
I'll let you continue. Just continue. Okay.
And we, for your information, we're offline, and people are the phone line went dead, so they're listening by gavel.
Okay. Okay.
So
and watching. Okay. And watching. That's good. Dr. Bonsager.
Okay, Amendment Number 2, which we just talked about, is the dated 2:40-something p.m.?
Yes, that is labeled 24G-1, but it is also starts on page 1, or page 9, line 24.
Correct. There are two issues in this amendment. The first one is on page 2 of the amendment, section E. And this is in response to a concern that was raised by ASHNA when they submitted their written testimony at the first hearing of the committee, the State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. And that was their concern that if the department proposes to immediately take over management of an institution because of immediate risk to life and safety, that that is a high-risk endeavor. And they suggested that the commissioner needed to be involved. And we thought that was a good idea, and that's what this does, is before we would take over, do such an action, the commissioner would need to be involved in the decision to do such.
Okay, very good.
And then the second issue is down at the bottom of page 3 of the amendment, starting at line 25, and this is to fix a drafting error on page 13 of the bill, and it has to do with administrative hearings. And the bill that you have on line 1 of page 13 said that AS 4464060 does not apply, and then there's a sentence about the parts of the Administrative Procedure Act that do apply. That's wrong, and so this amendment changes does not apply to applies and deletes the second sentence because all of the Administrative Procedure Act would apply.
Would apply. Okay, are there any questions on that section of Amendment Number 2? Seeing none, do we have a motion? Representative Gardner.
Yes, I move Amendment Number 2.
We have a motion to adopt Amendment Number 2. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, Amendment Number 2, 24G-1, and it begins page 9, line 24, is adopted. Dr. Montag.
I have nothing more to say today, unless you have more questions.
Madam Chair, we adopted amended version number 1 and adopted amendment number 2. And I think there are, Dr. Bonsager will bring back some revised language to us on the registry, and so that's where we're at. Pass the gavel back.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Sisley, you're going to work with them a little bit on that too.
Okay.
And I'm just curious, did you take that language out that you have?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All All right, that's fine. Well, then, really, I don't think we have anything more to do today. And then as soon as you can get that worked out, then let me know, and I'll be glad to put it on the agenda again.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, this meeting is adjourned. Oh, and you know what? I've got some. The next meeting that we have. No, we're not quite adjourned yet. Let me go back just to make sure what I've got down on my notes here, so I'm telling you all the things I want to tell you. Okay, next meeting, we will meet next Tuesday, and that's at 3 o'clock, and we will hear House Bill 29, 231, 112, 161, and 204. However, what I really want to tell you more about is on Thursday, April 17th, we are going to have a tour of the Johnson Youth Center. They are, you know, a lot of the social services areas that we deal with are hopefully prevention things that happen before kids get to that point. But they really do work with the kids that come in there. They work with them and try to they kind of go through a teaching process. They learn ways to deal with situations in their own lives. They get counseling so that they can deal with situations better, so they don't act out the way they do and things like that. And I just think it would be real good for this committee to be able to go see some of that. So we will come around to each of your offices. So hopefully everyone will be able to go at that meeting, and you do have it today, hopefully, so that you can sign that, because when we do go in there, obviously it's confidential and we can't reveal anybody we've seen in there or anything. And so if you could get this taken care of and fill that out before we go, that saves a lot of time while we're there.
Do you want us to give them to you or have them with us?
You know what, if you give them all to me right now, because it's easy to forget a piece of paper, and if I've got them all together, that would be great. So we'll try to get the rest of them, and I'll try to have all of them.
Okay.
And hopefully you all can come. The space is limited, and they can't take a big group of people through real easy. So staff can go if they're replacing you. And so we're kind of it's limited. They don't have a, so we're going to take a van, and we're going to go over and during the committee meeting time. So Thursday, that's what we're going to do. I think it's just a